Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I don't know about you, Alex, but every time I hear that song since about 1977, I just like to listen to it. just let me hear that, and it takes me back to the days of Howard Cosell and Dandy Don Meredith and Frank Gifford and halftime highlights, Monday Night Football, can't beat it. Willie Ramirez joining you here. It is Cofield and Company on a Monday. We are live at Ellis Island, the front yard. I am joined by Alexandra White, Alex White, the sports betting expert here in Las Vegas. I got Mateo on my right, quarterback of things from here and back, running everything, is my man Griff in the studio. Welcome to the show. Cofield is gone. We don't know where he's at. We don't know if he's ever coming back, but hopefully he is safe and getting some sanity in his life. I say that because, well, his Jets are playing tonight, and we hope that you come down and join us here at Ellis Island for all the food specials, drink specials, and hang out with us. We are here from 3 to 6 live on ESPN Radio, as we do every single Monday. I'll be hanging around afterwards. We got great prizes that we are giving away. 6 to 8, I'll be hanging out with you afterwards. I'm going to keep Mateo here also. And, so we're going to have a good time. Alex, how was your weekend? What's going on?
It was great. I'm excited to be here today. What a setup. I've never been here since this new front yard. If you have not been here, you have to come down here and check it out. It's absolutely beautiful. And this screen right here, I'm looking forward to the football game starting.
Yeah, I mean, there's TVs everywhere. Now, let me tell you, give you a little history lesson. I brought this up a couple of weeks ago with Steve, but so Ellis Island, this was never here, this front yard. Ellis Island is redesigned, but back in the late 80s, there was a nightclub up the street on Flamingo called Tramps, and there was a nightclub just up Koval at Harmon called the Shark Club. And there was always something to do in Las Vegas at the nightclubs. I would say between Wednesdays and Mondays, because Sunday night was the dance contest at Tramps. Monday was the talent contest at Shark. Tuesdays it was kind of dead. This is where we would come. So to see it revitalized, Steve Sears done a great job. Everybody's done a great. The Ellis's have done a great job. It is really built out. This front yard is impressive. I mean, we say it because we're here, yes, and we're hosted by them. But when I tell you that this is a fantastic place to watch a game, it is incredible. Spacious, like I said, food and drink specials that you cannot beat. And we'll get to those in a little bit. We are going to be giving away some stuff after the show, but each Monday we're getting let's do that now. Each Monday we do give away two top all you can eat and all you can drink beer for Sunday football viewing. It's $150 value.
Wow.
So it's really, you know, catered to the locals, and that's what this place has always been, is a locals place. So so come on down. We do that after the show, so hang out with us. $30 all you can drink beer in the front yard, NFL Sundays and Mondays. 15 plus beers to choose from. $45 all you can eat in a 3-hour time limit. So get down here, hang out with us. Mateo's got a t-shirt for you. Mateo, you got t-shirts? Yeah, he said yes. He's over there. I don't know, he's a gamer, so he's playing games or he's doing something. We are live on, and I don't know, are we going live at some point today, Griff?
Looking into it. We could possibly do a little live.
Griff,
yeah.
Griff quarterbacks everything from there. I got my right-hand man, Mateo, here. So we may have some live video going, but you have us here tuned in right here on ESPN. So, Alex, crazy weekend. For a couple of teams, one good, one bad, right? UNLV bounces back from its first loss of the season, and the Las Vegas Raiders just continue to tank. Let's start with UNLV. We're gonna talk about UNLV in a little bit, a little more at length, especially with the from a betting aspect. We're gonna have a lot of sports betting talk today because Alex doesn't just talk sports betting. She does her own power ratings. She has her own systems. Her and I have talked WNBA in the past.
Yes,
so
yeah.
We're gonna talk WNBA. I got someone coming on. We got a great guest lineup. Doug Feinberg is gonna be joining us from the East Coast, national sports reporter for women's basketball. He's going to be coming on. He's been to both WNBA Finals games, 1 and 2. But we're also going to get into the Raiders. Let's start with UNLV. They go up to Logan. They beat up Utah State. Bounced back in a good way. And now they got a couple of tough games on their hand. But your thoughts on just their immediate response to losing to Syracuse?
Absolutely love what I saw from the Rebels. And JVT, I was with him last week on Thursday, and he was worried that this might be a sleepy spot, right? Because coming off that loss, they have Utah State, who's not particularly a great team, and then they have Oregon State and Boise State, so a lot in front of them, right? And they can't afford another loss. Well, I love what we saw from this team. I love their identity. I love what Barry Odom has done. They are rushing the most out of any FBS school besides the three service academies. UNLV is number one after those three teams, so they have another 313 rushing yards in that game. And I just love what I see from Williams at quarterback. So I'm excited. I don't want this next game that's coming up to turn into a sleepy spot. We saw Oregon State go down from Nevada. Nevada has definitely overperformed and looked better. I think we all kind of had them at the bottom of the Mountain West, and they've definitely competed. So I don't want to take that away from the Wolfpack either, but I don't want UNLV to think that this is just going to be an easy win and not go in there prepared. But
and then yesterday, Las Vegas Raiders, I mean, it had to have been, I was at the Carolina game, but yesterday was, I mean, I think it was their worst performance of the season. It was ugly.
It's brutal. And you know what I feel for Aiden O'Connell? Because how do you give him a shot? You put him in at that starting role without his top two wide receivers. I mean, we just saw Jalen Hurts without his two top wide receivers, and they lost an embarrassing loss to Tampa Bay. And then you put Aiden O'Connell in that same situation. The Raiders really struggled on the ground. I'm just hyping up UNLV and their ability to run the ball. And the Raiders had 57 total rushing yards compared to Pittsburgh's 183. So I think that is a big problem here.
Yeah, Najee Harris with his first 100-yard rushing game of the season. Raiders can't get anything going. Missing Zamir White. You know, Amir Abdullah doing what he can. It's just sad to see. You know, I don't know whose head you call for, and I don't know if it's internal. When you see a team play like they played yesterday, I think it goes far beyond talent and what you have, because it's an NFL team. You're professionals. You have talent, right? You're at that level. You should be able to perform. It didn't even look like Antonio Pierce was asked about the team's effort, and I get it. He's got to say, no, we put forth the effort, and they're out there, but my God, they just look defeated. I mean, from where we're sitting, just the mental aspect of it, they just look defeated. All right, we are off and running. Once again, Willie Ramirez along with Alex White. We got you handled. Cofield and Company, we are at Ellis Island at the front yard. When we come back, we are going to be joined by the Athletics' Jordan Rodriguez. She covers the Rams, and guess who has the Rams next? The Las Vegas Raiders.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Another punt here for A.J. Cole, his third, and they get there! Punt is blocked! Ball is still free, drilled inside the 10. Jeremiah Moon.
Welcome back to Cofield and Company. We are live at Ellis Island today. Front yard, it is Willie Ramirez along with Alex White. Again, got Mateo running the show here. I got Griffin running the show in the studio. And we got a big show for you. If you want to come down and join us here at Ellis Island, come on down. Great drink specials, great food specials, Monday Night Football, Major League Baseball, hockey is in full swing. Did you happen to see the games today? There were three games.
Yes, they were early games.
Okay, the Kings and Senators.
7-6?
8-7 final. Eight, I looked seven at the score. I was like, what do we got, a Canadian Football League going? I mean, that was wild. So, anyway, yeah, come on down, join us, hang out. We are going to be here from 3 to 6 live, and then we're going to be here from 6 to 8 afterwards, giving away prizes, giving away some all-you-can-eat drink specials for Sunday football. So get down here. Lots of TVs, lots of tables, lots of entertainment. Once again, Monday Night Football, Jets and Bills. We're going to talk Jets and Bills in a little bit. We're going to be talking sports betting. And we are going to be talking to Jordan Rodriguez from The Athletic. She covers the Rams down in L.A. And who have the Raiders on deck? That is the Los Angeles Rams right now. Welcome to the show, Jordan Rodriguez. Jordan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. You'll not be surprised, like many Angelinos all day, every day, I am sitting in traffic right now. So thank you for having me at this time and distracting me from not moving on the 405.
Well, what's crazy is I was on my way down here, and I get on Flamingo just by Bally's past Las Vegas Boulevard, and I'm stuck in traffic. And then when I get right, literally, five seconds from where we're at, realize that they shut it down because they're now building out for the F1 track, the race that's coming up next month. So I had to U-turn it, and I'm literally hightailing it, jumping curbs, back way, behind the link, just to get here on time. But we made it, so we're all good.
But I know you're foreshadowing. It was foreshadowing. I love it.
I know you are limited on time, so I really appreciate you joining us. Let's jump right into this. I was reading some of your stuff. You wrote that the most frustrating part of the Rams' 1-4 start is each game has highlighted a different failure or discombobulation or genuine unluckiness. I read that, and all I thought was, are you sure you're not covering the Raiders? Because it sounds like the Rams are just as dysfunctional as the Raiders.
Yeah, and I'll start with the unluckiness because for some reason that's the easiest to explain, even though it's been the most outside of their control. They were hit so hard with injuries so early in the season, you know, by 3 weeks in, they were without most of their offensive line. They were without their two star receivers in Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. By week four, they're starting a rookie center who's their third string guy and a left guard who couldn't even make the roster the first 2 years that he was a member of the team. And it's been compounding in a big way for these Rams. You know, they missed their starting corner, just got him back in the mix. So they had to reshuffle and replan on the fly. And I think when you do that and you're not sticking to all the fundamentals that you operated with through training camp, when things like this happen so quickly, you start to make mistakes. The little things that you have been so practiced at doing, the execution and the details and winning in the margins, they are not doing. And so when you see something like out of their control, the biggest thing that Sean McVay as the head coach, that Matthew Stafford, that some of the other veterans in the room must do now is to prevent the out of their control circumstances like those injuries from turning into little details that they're missing or failures of execution, inclusive to some of the defensive issues and certainly the red zone issues.
Jordan, speaking of a big injury, huge part of the Rams offense and Cooper Kupp, Sean McVay said it was ideal for him to return in week 7, but no means is it guaranteed. How do you think Cooper Kupp's status is?
Well, if I know Cooper, and I've covered him for a while, he is going to be doing everything he can to return. I think what gets really tricky is they've got this short week coming up on the other side. You know, the Vikings, a team that, you know, like any of this coaching tree, different pollinations of that coaching tree, you very much would like to beat that guy, even though you're friends. So Kevin O'Connell coming into town on the short week on that Thursday. And then this was a high ankle injury, and this was, you know, not enough to get him on IR, but it was significant for him to miss multiple weeks of time. And he's coming back in and playing 2 games in 5 days on turf. So right now, today was the day that he got, like, sort of the test point workload in with the head athletic training staff and to kind of see how he's handling some of the game-like movement. Because I don't think that they're going to be I think they're going to be extremely careful on the team side, just understanding how quick that turnaround into their next game will be and already having so much of what they've installed ready to go for a world without him. They've sort of become practiced in that area, and so now you're changing everything again. So it'll be really interesting. I do think it really will come down to, you know, how he shows up on Wednesday, how he's feeling Wednesday, how much of the game plan they have in, and certainly keeping an eye on that short week on the other side.
Once again, we're speaking with The Athletic's Jordan Rodriguez. She covers the Los Angeles Rams. The Raiders head down to L.A. this weekend, and they play in Inglewood at SoFi on Sunday. Jordan, the Rams have the sixth worst defensive efficiency in terms of allowing opponents to score on 48% of their offensive drives. Now that they're coming out of the bye, what has Los Angeles done to fix this?
Yeah, you started seeing little pieces of it the week before. They adjusted significant elements of their secondary. Trey White was a healthy scratch. I will put the context in there that he wasn't supposed to be playing for them this early anyway because he's coming off an Achilles, but they had so many injuries in their defensive backfield that they needed him to get a full rep share, and it was kind of clear early on as gameplay started that he's still feeling out like what he's comfortable with that Achilles. So they got Darius Williams back the week before the bye, and that's huge because that allows them to play one of their young corners, Kobe Durant, opposite of Darius. And so you have sort of that mixture of play. They brought Akella Witherspoon in, and then they're mixing around their safeties. Quentin Lake was in the star, so closer to the line of scrimmage. And they are now experimenting with moving Cam Curl back and forth closer to the line of scrimmage while keeping Quentin Lake deeper in the defensive backfield to help really man down that communication. Because really, early on with this group, they've had issues pop up that they've since showed signs of correcting and developing into, inclusive to like stopping the run was a real issue for them early on. They've cleaned that up a little bit. Explosive pass plays, a significant issue for them. Moving their secondary around, they're trying to clean that up a little bit. But the main element I keep hearing from players in the locker room is it's communication. It's connecting all three layers of this defense and communicating in a way with all of these new players and all of these moving parts because of the injuries and the young players in certain levels of the defense. And making sure everybody, if you have a question, speak up, ask the question. It will be answered for you by someone else. And then you can keep moving. And I think that's where you're seeing them really put an emphasis on that, particularly with some of those explosive pass plays that they've allowed. Moving their personnel around is one thing, but also making sure that the guys who are in the field are communicating effectively with each other.
Great breakdown, Jordan. We have about 1 minute. I'm just curious, is there still a territorial feel in this matchup, considering the Raiders still have very faithful fans in Los Angeles, and now the Rams are in Inglewood?
Yeah, and you know what? It's almost every week at this point. I mean, I watched the Packers fans fill up that stadium. It was not an even split by any means. I watched the 49ers fill up the stadium. It was not an even split by any means. And we know that Raiders fans are, there's a lot of Raiders fans here in Southern California. Territorial, I don't know from a team perspective, but certainly from a branding perspective. These few home losses and home games, even the 49ers one was a win, but These couple of home games have been really tough in terms of watching the opposing team fill up your home stadium.
Jordan, we really appreciate you joining us, especially on short notice. We'll have you on down the road. Thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Yep, there you go. Jordan Rodriguez from The Athletic. Make sure you follow her stuff, especially leading up to this week. She'll have all the stuff from Rams camp as far as the opponent for this Sunday with the Las Vegas Raiders. Dodgers, they cut the lead in half. 6-3 Mets now. I'm not sure what inning that we're in. I missed that. But we got all the games on. We got the Dodgers and Mets. We got the Yankees and the Guardians game one. We got the Jets and the Bills. I'm sure if you need hockey, we can put some hockey on. It is Willie. It is Alex. We are at Ellis Island and the front yard.
15 seconds to air. Stand by, all cameras.
Ready with slow motion and isolated cameras. In less than 5, in 3, 2, 1.
Take tape.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Right, it is Cofield and Company. We are down at Ellis Island, Flamingo and Koval at the front yard. Willie Ramirez along with Alex White. We have no clue where Cofield is at, and we're not going to ask. We just hope that he gets back next week, and we hope that he gets through tonight because the Jets are his team. Jets and Bills on Monday Night Football. Get down here and join us. Hang out with us. Chill with us. We got incredible drink and food specials here at the front yard. We're going to be giving away and all you can eat, all you can drink stuff, but you got to be here between 6 and 8, so get down here and hang out with us. And Mateo will keep you in stitches. He'll tell you a joke. You get down here, he'll tell you a joke, he'll give you a T-shirt. So, Alex, I know you're a woman about town. You got your sports book show, you got your sports betting show. You're doing the thing. You're at Aviators. You're the in-game host for our AAA team. Are you on TikTok?
I have a TikTok. I do not use it very often.
Oh, man. Let me tell you something. So when I first downloaded, I was like, I am not. I heard so many people get wrapped up into it. Right. When they get wrapped up, they were like, no. They'd say how they got caught up. I was like, well, then there's no way I'm getting caught up in TikTok. I'm not downloaded. I'm not nothing. Then Jordan, my son, he was like, oh, check it out, you know. Then he'd want to share stuff, so I'd have to have the app on there when he'd share something.
Correct.
I go on there about a month and a half ago, and I notice live. So I know Instagram live, right? So I start watching. Then all of a sudden I start watching these battles. So they go into a chat, and then they invite another person in, and they start battling, right? They start battling one another, and the battles are of their teams, which are followers that jump into their chat. So they have anywhere from sometimes 10, sometimes 200 followers in the chat at the same time. There's a little gift box at the bottom where if they click it, there's all these different gifts, and they're little animated things, and basically they're themed. Like right now there's a bunch of Halloween themes. There was one with football ones. I'm pissed off that they eliminated the football one because we're still in the football season.
Yeah,
I think they should do bodybuilding ones so that like, they have dumbbells, and then however much the weight is, that's how many coins it would be, because I'd be all in for that. You already know, right? I'm in the gym. All right.
This is a world I didn't even know about.
This is a world I didn't know about it, but I am so far into it now. But I don't want to do the battles. Well, I think I would get a kick out of it, but there's so much time put into it. And because I've learned from some of these battlers and the way that they orchestrate it. So I'm tied in with a few of them. The one early in the morning, they do these toxic battles where they talk trash back and forth. And then once they're done, they're friends. But the trash that they talk is wild. It's crazy. But like, it's interesting because they'll challenge the other person to, like, your team can't get you a this or can't get and name the gift. And then their team gets so angry that they end up gifting it to prove that they can do it. Well, that's how they generate the coins.
Right.
But at night, let me tell you something. I will do shows or I'll be on my way home from a game. There's a girl named Gigi. The first time I jumped into her chat, she had a lion's outfit on, because one of the best gifts you can receive is a lion. It's a real lion that comes across your screen and it roars for 30,000 coins. And I'm watching, I'm going, who is this little girl with the lion thing? So I started watching it. Her vibe is so energetic. I started watching her. Now she does these series, two-verse series with Julianne and Remy, and there's a fourth, whoever they generate in, right? I swear to you, if I'm leaving a game or I'm leaving somewhere and, like, you know, I have my dog. That's it, right? I have my son. He's 28 years old. And I'm like, I get home and I'm wired from the game. I go into their rooms and watch their I feel like I'm part of the family. It's like I'm going home to the family, right? They are so entertained. The one girl, Juliana, when I kid you not, if you go look at the comments on all of her posts, she looks like Paige Beckers. Paige Beckers looks like her. How about that? Because... Okay. And Remy, she generates all these. I'll be looking at the thing. There'll be like 500 coins for her, 20 coins for this one, and she'll have 40,000.
Oh my God!
They are the funnest people to be around. And so Gigi has actually been coaching me in how to do the lives for my sports talk. So, like right now, we're live on TikTok, and then I'll do lives and just talk. So I want to start doing Sunday morning shows for sports betting.
Okay.
And go over the point spreads. I've had people come in and ask me.
Yes.
It is wild. It is so entertaining, and I get such a kick out of them. And, like, I literally couldn't wait for today because I'm here for 3 hours. Then I'll do the two-hour watch party. I'll get in my car. I'll be home by 9. They do their series at midnight Eastern, and it's like going home to the family. Yep. It's like I got three new daughters. They're awesome. I love them. And you know what? I told Gigi, she lives not too far on the East Coast from Villanova, Philadelphia. I said, I'm getting you tickets. She's a Paige Beckers fan. And obviously, Juliana's a fan of Paige Beckers. And so I was like, hey, Connecticut's playing in Tennessee. She's in Tennessee, right?
Yes.
So, and Remy, by the way, the girl Remy, I don't think I've ever been on one of their lives where she's not eating. This girl looks like she could step on stage and train, like be one of my son's clients and get in a fitness competition. Where she puts it, I have no clue. Of course, a 22-year-old metabolism.
Right.
But When I tell you that they are entertaining, it's fantastic. If you have not checked out TikTok in these battles, I highly encourage anybody to go just watch for an hour. You will get – forget about getting hooked on just the videos. The battles are entertaining. The trash that they talk is fantastic. Anyway.
It sounds very entertaining. I'm glad that you brought up – because I was just thinking, when does he have time for this? Yesterday you were at the Raiders game, went to the Knights game to cover that game.
That's right.
And I'm like, when does he have time for this?
And you know what? And there's a couple times where I'll peek in, I'll go on TikTok, and I'll see, oh, Gigi's live. I'll just pop in a room real quick, and she'll be like, Willie! And I'll go, hey, I'm at the game, just wanted to say hi. And I'll send what's called a heartbeat, because then it levels you up on their team.
Right.
So
okay.
Every day you got to send a new heartbeat. Yeah, so anyway. Hey, when we come back, Steve Kim, he joins us every single Monday talking everything sports. So when we get back, we are going to talk to Steve. Get down here, Ellis Island, front yard. It is Willie, it is Alex, Cofield and Company.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule podcast, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
Distractions are our choice. You know, what we do for a living, it's surrounded by noise 24/7. And brother, if that affects you in any way, shape, or form, you gotta go do something else. You know, our guys have heard me say a million times, if it's not with you there at 5 a.m. working out, if it's not with you in the hospital when you're doing rehab after a surgery, if it's not there with you when, God forbid, you're going through those tough moments, then it has absolutely no bearing or no relevance to your mindset.
Coming off a bye week, Mario Cristobal talking about the Miami Hurricanes. It is Willie Ramirez along with Alex White, Cofield and Company. We are live at Ellis Island, the front yard. Get down here and join us. Got plenty of time to get here before kickoff of Monday Night Football, but as he does every single week, joining us, the number one Miami Hurricane fan in the nation, Steve Kim. Steve, how are you, sir?
Gentlemen, good Monday to you.
No, well, not gentlemen. Steve is gone. We don't know where he's at. We're not even going to ask where he's at. We're trying not to find out. We're just hoping he gets back safe at some point in time. But you have myself and Alexandra White, sports betting wizard, Alex White. So,
well, so glad Steve, to be with you guys. How you guys doing?
Steve, Miami steady at number six in the nation. My question is, the first thing I thought of when I was doing the rundown today and I saw, I was like, okay, what are we going to talk about with Steve? Should the Hurricanes be ranked higher than Ohio State?
You know, that's a great question. This reminds me a lot of what happened with Alabama and Georgia when they were both considered top five teams, both of them. And I remember thinking, based on the way this game went and how close it was, neither should really drop all that much. So, you know, Ohio State, I've been on record saying Ohio State and Texas, I believe, have the two best rosters, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, in this new NIL world. Miami's probably right where they need to be, given the fact that, you know, their schedule's been okay. And the last two games, they've been shaky. I mean, according to some people, they could easily be 4-2. I went to both of them, and I think the bye week came at a very, very good time. There was a banged-up team, and defensively, they need to shore things up. They have not played a really clean game offensively either. I think sixth is fine. I mean, again, the overall goal is you want to make the playoffs, which you can do it two ways. You could either win the ACC or your conference or be the third-best team in the SEC or Big Ten. That's the way you're going to get in. And so for Miami, I don't think the rankings are as important as it was, let's say, last year when it was a 14 playoff system.
Okay, so let me ask you this, though. When you say six is okay, but the other thing is the first round of this year's playoff is at campus site, so you want to make sure that you stay up there as well.
Yeah, and again, if you are a conference winner out of the P4, I believe you get a bye, don't you? So you definitely want to be part of the top four. But again, there's going to be a lot of attrition. This Miami game coming up with Louisville, I think, is going to be very interesting. Louisville's actually very dangerous offensively. They put 38 points up on Miami last year at home, and that's with the quarterback that I don't think is as good as Tyler Shuck. And they have this really explosive young running back named Isaac Brown, and then the receivers, Ja'Cory Brooks, is finally playing like the top 50 recruit that he was. If Miami can get past this game, Willie, and I believe this is their toughest game remaining, out of the remaining six, I believe that they will actually go undefeated going into the ACC championship game.
That's funny. I was going to actually ask you about that Louisville game, because I have heard some people calling for that upset over Miami there, and I do think it's their toughest one too. After that, they have Florida State, which looks like a much bigger matchup than what we have seen from the Seminoles this year. And Florida State has won 7 of the past 9 played in Miami, but you feel okay about that one as well?
This Florida State team is not exactly of 2013 vintage. I'll be at that game. And look, Miami has not done a great job of actually playing towards the number the last couple of weeks. I mean, I was at the Virginia Tech game. I believe they were 16-point favorites for that game. Got out of there with the last play. You know, we all saw what happened with that Hail Mary. Against Cal, I believe with Cal they were a 10-point favorite and had to come back from a 35-10 deficit. And You know, it's interesting about this game with Louisville. Miami is actually the underdog by a point or two, aren't they? So, you know, look, I think this game is very tough because it's on the road. Miami in the last 6-7 years has not played well coming off a bye. I don't know what that really says about the program or about who we have played. But again, this game is very, very dangerous. And if Miami can get through this one, and then the other game that I think is actually going to be a lot tougher than people think is Georgia Tech in Atlanta. And I believe that game is November 9th. Georgia Tech's actually a pretty good team. And Georgia Tech, I believe, is going to give Notre Dame all they can handle this weekend. So there's still some landmines that Miami has to get through in the second half of this season.
Friday, Florida State is at Duke. Duke laying 3.5.
That tells you a lot.
Yeah, well, I wonder if Florida State, though, even though they really don't have any business looking ahead or looking past anybody, considering the season that it's having, it's still Florida State-Miami. It's still the mystique behind that matchup. Do the Seminoles, they don't look past Duke, do they?
No, I don't think they can because they're not good enough to look past anybody. I will say this about Florida State. I saw a pretty good amount of their game against Clemson. Brock Glenn may not be Charlie Ward or Jameis Winston, but in that particular game, for stretches at a time, he was much better than DJ Ungulele. DJ struggled. We all saw what happened. I think it became a mental thing with him. The fan base had turned against him. And Brock at least looked functional and serviceable offensively. So, again, the rivalry games are always a little bit difficult. I believe ABC announced, along with the university, that's a 7 p.m. game at Hard Rock next week. But, you know, if you're Florida State, if you're going to try to salvage this year, it begins at Duke. They still have more natural talent than Duke, though. I know Duke has a better record, but if you examine Duke's schedule, it was very, very favorable. I still think they're very limited on offense. Malik Murphy is a little bit inconsistent there at quarterback. You know, Duke, to me, is a team that has to win the turnover margin, and they have to face teams that aren't necessarily world beaters, and that's how they basically won and got out to that 4-0 start. I actually think Florida State wins that game this weekend.
Steve, so your team had a bye week, so you got to kind of sit back and just enjoy this awesome October 12th that did live up to the hype. Which game did you like the most, Penn State, USC? Ohio State, Oregon, what were you watching this past Saturday?
Well, I'm going to keep it simple. There's a couple of things that stood out. I mean, obviously, I think the whole world watched Oregon, Ohio State, and I thought Oregon played a really good game. And I do think this, though, there's a chance they could play again in a couple of months here in the Big Ten title game, and that'll be on a neutral setting, not in Autzen, which provided, I believe, an unbelievable home field advantage. That crowd absolutely made a difference. And I just get the sense that if they played again, I don't know if Oregon can play to that particular level. And remember, they only lost by 1 point, and they botched that last drive. I think Ryan Dave needs to come under a little bit of scrutiny for the way they handled that situation with first down at the 28. It looked like to me that they were in position to kick a field goal and perhaps win the game, and they just kind of went backwards. I still am very high on Ohio State, but that was an excellent game. It lived up to everything it was supposed to. I thought Alabama-South Carolina was very telling in a sense that Alabama is not the same team. They just don't look good defensively. They have issues at cornerback. I don't think they cover very well. And up front defensively, they got shoved around by a very, very limited offensive team. And they're asking a lot of Jalen Milroe, who looked worn out by the end of the game. And as for SC, I'm from LA, so I kind of have the pulse of the USC Heart fans. There's some scrutiny on Lincoln Riley, and I'm trying to figure out if that's fair or not, because even though they're 3-3 guys, they're 6 players from being 6-0 in the top five. So it's kind of the way if you look at it. If you like Lincoln Riley, you look at it from my perspective. If you don't like Lincoln Riley, you probably think he's on the hot seat.
Once again, we're speaking with Steve Kim, three Knockdown Rule podcast. Let's jump ship for a second here and switch to boxing from Kim's corner. Did we have some dispute with this verdict over the weekend?
Yeah, well, Bivol and Beterbiev fought for the undisputed light heavyweight title in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. I thought it was a very tense, tight, hotly contested boxing match. I wouldn't call it a great fight, but certainly one with a lot of skill and strategy between two of the better fighters in the world pound for pound. You know, I thought Beterbiev edged it the last two rounds. I thought he closed a little harder to win a decision, and that's the way it went on the official scorecards. But this has to be mentioned. A lot of people that were there that I know and some other people that watched the fight that I respect and a lot of fans on the social media apps, they're telling me that they either thought Bivol won that fight or it should have been a draw. And then Turki Alo-Sheik, who kind of controls the purse strings for the Saudi Arabian group that funds these fights, he seems to think that Bivol won too. I think there's a very good chance we might see Chapter 2 of this rivalry.
I was just going to ask you that because I read Mike Coppage from ESPN. He declared we need to see a rematch to determine the light heavyweight supremacy.
Yeah, and you know, here's the reality. Neither fighter is the type that is what I would call a true superstar. They're not Canelo. They're not just the type that can fight you or me and draw hundreds of thousands of pay-per-view buys or have hotels put up a lot of money for their fights. This fight without the Saudi Arabian money would not have happened. That's just the reality of it. And so they may actually circle back because they need each other. Because I'm not so sure if David Benavidez is willing to walk across the street. I know he just moved up to light heavyweight. It looks like he's going to be fighting David Morrell perhaps in the first month of 2025. Look, it was a very good fight from a purist standpoint. But doesn't necessarily mean that it had great commercial value to those in the United States. And if Turki Alo put up the money once again for a rematch, there's actually a very good chance that it could happen again. I'm on the drive-on list. Sorry, guys, I'm just about to park here at Universal City.
All right, let's go back to college football because I'll tell you the game that I was watching and I was intrigued by. Of course, it was Kansas State-Colorado because I was at Big 12 Media Days both days, and I tweeted out a picture after speaking to the young man. I know his sister who lives here in Las Vegas. Remember Avery Johnson's name because he's going to have a breakout season. He's going to have one game that all of a sudden everyone's going to be like, who is this kid? He certainly made a name for himself Saturday against Colorado. Did you watch the game and were you impressed?
Yeah, I mean, look, Avery, I think, is a very good athlete. He's probably the highest rated recruit that's ever come out of high school to go to Kansas State. He's been a little bit inconsistent as a pure pocket passer, but great athlete, and I thought in that last drive he earned his stripes. And I'm still trying to figure out why they did not give the ball more to DJ Giddens in the drive before when they threw that interception. But Avery is the type of guy, by the time he leaves, he may be their first-round quarterback that they've ever had. He's got a lot of natural ability. Thank you very much. A lot of talent. And it was a big victory for Kansas State because, let's face it, a second Big 12 loss this early, it really kind of shattered whatever long-term goals they had for 2024.
You know, it's hard to watch with Cam Rising and the amount of injuries that he has gone through, and now we saw him, he just was not right in that Arizona State game. And speaking of Big 12 Media Days, Brett McMurphy had asked him if he would be back for 2025 for an eighth year in college football, and he said that's not the plan. 7 years is more than enough. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wrote on my Twitter feed every Sunday. I kind of do a quick wrap-up of what I saw in college football. If Cam Rising was a horse, based on what I saw Friday, it's time to take him to the glue factory. He looked terrible. And I know that there's been a lot of injuries. I also know that he's been an iconic player for Utah, and that can't be forgotten about. But here's the issue, though, Alexander. They have a young quarterback, Zach Wilson's younger brother, who's actually shown some promise. And it's one thing if Cam is still a good, solid college quarterback that can lead you to victory. He was, I believe, a detriment on Friday night. He just simply could not move. He had no arm strength. He bounced a bunch of passes in a game that I believe was a must-win for Utah. And I just kept thinking to myself, I know that there has to be some loyalty from Kyle Whittingham towards a guy that's taken him to Rose Bowls, but you also have games to win. And I know this is going to be very awkward, that if you're Kyle Whittingham, this goes beyond who you're going to start next week. It also goes beyond. It also goes to this question. If Cam Rising wants to come back, knowing that you have a good young quarterback that's won you a game or two this year, do you even want Cam Rising back should he want to return next season?
See, we got about 45 seconds. Real quick, I saw your guy Whitlock tweeted, football is humbling Deion Sanders. Is he the reason that Travis Hunter got hurt?
You know, I disagree with Jason on that a little bit. Here's the issue. It is not Deion's call. That young man wants to play both ways. Now, whether he should or not, or whether that's good for the long term of his health, that we can argue, but I don't know. I think that's a little unfair, but I've said this. If Colorado had more Louie brought in by Deion, nobody would have to play both ways. Keep that in mind.
Steve, we appreciate it. We're up against it. Thanks for joining us, as you do every single Monday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.
All right, there he is, Steve Kim, 3 Knockdown Rule podcast. Make sure you check him out. We are down at Ellis Island. Once again, get down here, join us. Ellis Island, the front yard. We got an hour in the books. We still got 2 more to go here on Cofield and Company. Get down here for the drink specials and the food specials. Everything going on for Monday Night Football. Plus, we got Major League Baseball playoffs. Currently 6-3 Mets in the bottom of the 8th. Freddie Freeman up to bat. I'm not going to give you play-by-play, but if you get down here, you can watch the games. You can watch the Yankees, Guardians. You can watch the Jets and the Bills. And if you want hockey, we'll get it on one of the TVs for you. It's Willie. It is Alex. We are at Ellis Island Front Yard for Cofield and Company.